Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to my podcast. For the next hour or so, you will hear me chat turds with a guest, and in doing so, hopefully realise that shit literally happens to us all. And talking of shit, my hair has fallen out. It's a side effect from the chemotherapy that I'm now on, and it's a very common side effect, but I was secretly hoping it wouldn't happen, but it has happened, and I've got a naked head now, and I'm sad about it. I'm not going to try and move myself out of that feeling because I'm allowed to feel sad about that, and I'm going to have faith that I'm not always going to feel sad about it, but right now I do. I'm just not okay with it right now, but I do have faith that I will get used to it again because this has happened before and I got used to it before. Anyway, it's not about me. Today you get to hear my turd chat with someone called Tani Seagrave. She is a serious badass mountain biker who you may not have heard of unless you follow that sport, and in which case you will have definitely gasped at her downhill racing skills. In the intro bit, you'll hear that I say she's won 3 World Cups. That is a lie. She's actually won 8. And because she's so modest, she waited until after the chat to message me and tell me I was wrong. Because that's the kind of person she is. She didn't want to be that guy. Tani, please be that guy. 8 World Cups. Tell everyone. And I'm really sorry I got that wrong. So, let's get on with the show. Not even sure if show is the right word. Let's get on with the turd chat. And then please follow my podcast so you never miss a future episode. Okay, I'll see you on the flip side. Loads of love. Bye. Unless you're into downhill mountain biking or anything to do with that sport, you might not be aware of today's guest, Tani Seagrave, one of the best downhill mountain bike riders in the world. And she's 27. She's been riding since a kid and is highly respected and looked up to in the sport. I've known Tani for a few years, ever since she launched a fundraising campaign for Copperfield. And I also got to witness with my own eyeballs her hoon down a mountain in Fort William in 2015, which is actually where she has won 1 or 2 World Cups in the past. In fact, she has won 3 World Cups in total and is really just very great as a human and in the sport. And today she gets to discuss all things turds and glitter with yours truly. Welcome, Tani.
Thank you very much. Blushing. What an introduction that was.
I mean, I did miss out the fact that you played boob dodgeball for us at the Copper Box in London as well.
Yes.
Which is probably the pinnacle of your career.
It was. I still talk to people about that, actually. So
I do feel like we were living on another planet that night, like having all these celebrities throw boob balls at each other and people spectating. Oh, yeah, it was wild. So, you know, I'm going to let you introduce your turd. What do you want to talk about today?
I think the most fitting turd would be my most recent one. So I had a crash this April, which was different to all my other crashes because I sustained a concussion, which I didn't know much about really. I obviously knew that with what we do, they're quite common, but they're just not talking about very often. And yeah, it was really scary because it kind of hit me like a brick wall. I didn't know what to expect, and it was very different to what I did expect. And it ended up taking me out for, 7 months now. So, and I've only just started to feel like myself. So that's definitely a big turd recently.
Yeah. Considering how much it has wiped you out, it is huge. And for someone who, you know, can't afford to take big chunks of time out of the sport and out of competitions and out of races, where were you when the crash happened? What was the day? What was the event? Or was it just training?
So I'd already done the first World Cup. We ticked that off. And to be honest, I was struggling with chronic fatigue already and we couldn't find the cause. That later came to light, but it was just at a event in South Wales. So it was meant to just be a load of pro riders riding another pro rider's line that he had built with Red Bull. So it was kind of like a jam. And we were just kind of showing off basically to people that came to watch and celebrating this person's line. But I don't know. I was still really tired. I'd had COVID not too long before and crashed onto my head. So that was it really after that. I showed signs of concussion, but I was fine for a few days and it was a delayed response really to the hit.
Oh my God. Okay. So how did those, what happened next? Like what symptoms were you showing?
Immediately after I crashed, I couldn't really see properly, so it was super blurry and I felt really sick and I was quite confused, but I knew where I was and I could remember everything that happened. I knew my name, I knew my date of birth. So to the medics, I guess in a way it's not too concerning. So yeah, a friend of mine took me to the hospital actually, so we made our own way there. Obviously there's a lot worse going on, so we waited for quite a while, but I think we got to like the 8-hour mark and I was so tired, and everyone knows what it's like waiting in hospitals, so it did get to a point where I was like, we'll just go back. And they checked in on me like every couple of hours that evening just to make sure I was all good.
And then at what point did you think, no, this feels like a bigger thing than I thought?
Like I said, it came on a few days later, so when I got home, I was getting better every day. And I think 5 days to a week after the crash, the standard protocol is to get out and do what you usually do. So, well, I just went for a small bike ride and felt great during the ride. I was like, sweet, this is fine. Like, I feel amazing. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be like, I don't know, 4 weeks max, because that's how long you're meant to take off after a concussion. But we don't actually have those protocols in our sport, so we're not forced to do that, which I think is something that definitely needs changing. But
really? Yeah.
Finished this ride and I was with a friend of mine, and I just, once, I don't know, I think after 10 minutes, my heart rate was super high, which was not normal. I could only explain it was kind of like I was having a panic attack. It felt really, I was seeing dizzy again. I was dizzy and I was seeing blurry. And at that point, I kind of drove home, and then after that I was in like a dark room for like 5 to 7 days because I couldn't stand any light or noise or people talking. And obviously at that point it's too hard to even think like something's going wrong. The brain's just in such a high alert and red flag mode, I guess. There's no time to really think that it's going wrong because it is going wrong. So yeah, we knew at that point that I guess that's just a normal. It's apparently, you know, the amount of times I've been told it's so normal, but at the time it feels anything but normal because it feels so out of your control and you just feel like an imposter in your own brain and body.
Oh, so did you have to, was there any treatment for it?
Well, that's another scary part, is not really. There's Not as far as I was aware, there wasn't. So I went to, you know, I've got amazing support by my sponsors when it comes to injuries. But I can get, I managed to see doctors really quickly. I'm very, very lucky to have that with the sport. But they can't see what goes on in your head. So they, you know, they tested my eyes quickly and my reactions, and everything was functioning fine. So that was a really confusing thing to hear at the time, considering, I don't know, I felt anything but fine. It was really, really, it's so hard to explain, but I've said it before, I felt like I was kind of drowning from the inside out, and you've got just enough space to breathe, but like not quite enough. And that's what it felt like for weeks. And yeah, the doctors kept saying I'd get better after a few weeks in time. But I guess the time frame was just not what anyone really expected. So, yeah, eventually I just went around the globe pretty much searching for answers, and I eventually found somewhere that, took me under their care and gave me the responses and the care that I needed.
I read that you were most surprised, and something that you really weren't aware of, hasn't been really spoken about, but the impact of that sort of your mental health and feeling that heightened anxiety that had come about with the concussion. Like, had that ever come to the surface before the crash? Had you struggled with anxiety before, and then did this just really elevate it? How did that work?
Yeah, so like you mentioned in the beginning, I've been racing my entire life pretty much. Mm. So it's all I've ever known. And I think it's a very comfortable bubble that we're in. It's a life that really happy with. It's an easy life. We travel around the world. We race our bikes. You know, I've had a few injuries the past few years, but they're not major for us anyway. They're, you know, a dislocated ankle, a done shoulder. Like, they're normal things to get through as an athlete. But I recently had a couple of slipped discs in my neck. And I think it's kind of like you don't really realize to what extent, because we're built to have an injury, get back as soon as possible, race as soon as possible, and get the results as soon as possible. And we do take time off, but probably not enough compared to non-athletes, I guess, because we're just constantly, constantly pushing. And I think this eventually with my neck and the disc pressing on the nerves, and obviously it all being super close to the brain and the head, and fatigue and all that, I did start to develop real bad anxiety. Like, last year was the first time in my life that I'd ever experienced a panic attack. And then from there, I had a few more. And I think it's just, we were saying that crash was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. But like, that was it for me, because there were so many things behind the scenes that just weren't really, I don't know, what should have felt, has always felt easy, just training for my job, just was not it. And I got so worried. We went for blood tests and we couldn't really understand what was going on. But I guess it was the first time I'd ever experienced anxiety, and I didn't know what it felt like before then.
And like, how do you explain anxiety to your sponsors, right? So for so many years, people want to know, is she well enough to get on a bike? Like, but physically, can she physically ride a bike? Fine, get her down that hill. But has anyone ever asked, how are you feeling mentally? Can you get on the bike? Can you do this race? How do you feel about that? Do you feel, what pressures are you under? Maybe these are the three questions. What pressures are you under to get on that bike and do the race, even if you're not feeling tip top? And has there ever been a question before these crashes, the one that, you know, instigated the initial panic attack and then this, you know, recent run, where someone has asked, are you mentally okay to get on that bike?
I think I am in a very, very lucky position where my dad runs the team. So I think my health will always be put first. You know, I have a very understanding team and sponsors, and we work really close with our sponsors to ensure that we've signed with the right people and they understand that yeah, we're humans. We're not we're not robots, and we're not billboards. And until now, it's been a really, really good, well, it still is, relationship. And I haven't felt a pressure to get back. But I know for a fact that 99% of athletes, or even other people with, you know, work duties, family duties, will feel that pressure to get back to where they were. And the problem is that the pressure didn't help the concussion itself. And there's no pressure from around me, like I said, but I think deep down for me, there's not a pressure, but there was definitely, if I felt like I wasn't doing what I've always been built to do, or what all I've ever known. So yeah, it was just, it's just been massive whirlwind. And I think hopefully sharing it, people will look at other athletes, and younger athletes especially, and not, and you know, take concussions more seriously and mental health more seriously. Because I get told so often, oh, you must be so mentally tough to do what you do. I've been thinking about that a lot recently. I don't think it's the fact that I'm any different mentally, or I'm mentally tough. I just think my mental state works for what I do. But is that necessarily tough, in inverted commas? I'm not so sure, because living with a mindset like that every day isn't the most enjoyable experience, but it works for racing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think I've had this massive empty space now of not working towards goals, not working towards results, not working towards gold medals. And it's literally my health, and it's been a completely different way of life for me, even though from the outside it looks so minor, you know. It's just, it's hard to see.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you, and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I mean, I think we are becoming way more accepting of mental health, mental illnesses. But it, do you find like you have to shout about it even louder? Like, you can't see a broken bone, but I have a broken head. I have a broken brain, and this needs fixing. I can't just get back on the bike. Do you feel like that needs to be shouted about louder?
Yeah. I think it's also, I definitely think it's not, because before I experienced it, like I said, I wasn't really aware of that type of stuff. Like, I've definitely always, been very understanding of it, but not understanding to the fact where I'd experienced it.
Yeah.
Whereas now I've experienced it, I have a whole different level of empathy and sympathy and understanding for people that live with a mental illness every single day of their lives. And to me, it's mind-blowing. People are so strong. And I see myself, I'm like, oh my God, like, you know, a race down a hill is easy, like, compared to what people go through every single day of their lives. And I know I have a good platform, and, you know, mountain biking is a gnarly sport, and it's seen as an extreme sport. And I think there's a lot more people that struggle mentally than they set out to show and believe. So I feel like hopefully, yeah, by sharing my story, it does help. But on the other side, I feel like, yeah, it's not something that's completely visible, and people won't always understand if they haven't experienced it or got someone close to them that goes through something like that. So
yeah,
not everyone's going to get it, but I guess that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah. Can we go back to some past crashes when you've had to get back on the bike? How do you get back on a bike after you've had a crash? Because I read somewhere that you have seen like a sports psychologist in the past to help you get back on it. because and is there a time frame? Do you have to, like, within a certain time before you, like, really frightened, you're so frightened about doing it? Or, like, how did you find that process in the past?
I guess you just trust the process, because there's, you know, it's so normal for us to crash and get hurt. Yeah. Luckily, I had a good, like, 10-year stint where I didn't really get hurt majorly at all. And then all of a sudden my luck ran out and I just got one after the other. And the first one's all right. They give you a time frame. It's the first time you've been out of competition. So you've got something to get fired up for. And you're like, yeah, I'm going to come back and I'm going to win. You know, I'm going to have that fairy tale end into my injury. And, you know, it might not happen that way. And, you know, you get slightly disappointed. And then it happens again and you have to go through the process again and then again and then again. And it does get to a point where it does start to chip away a bit at your fear. You know, your motivation starts to slowly shrink and you start to ache. Your body isn't the same as it was pre-injuries. So, yeah, I've had my sports psychologist. I didn't get in the beginning for those injuries. I literally had him just for race purposes, but as I've grown older and had more injuries, that is definitely a forefront of why I work with people. And I now have a new psychiatrist as well, and I've worked with mental coaches during all this time, because I feel like, you know, you have different horses for courses, and I feel like it's the same thing with the brain. There's so much stuff that goes on. And yeah, like you said earlier, it's hard. If you're not a happy racer, you're not gonna be a fast racer, I don't think. So yeah, I've had to kind of step back and in my day-to-day life look at what needs help and, like, how can I help myself here to then go on and be better. But
yeah, eventually getting on that bike, it's all the pre bit. So you've been off the bike since May? Is that when it was?
Yeah.
I did see that you were on the bike the last few days, right? But obviously not racing and not doing anything silly, which is amazing and a bit awesome. But before you talk about that, what has the last few months entailed? Like, have you seen a clear plan? I mean, you've just said that you've had to find all these people around the world because it's not as known where to turn to, I suppose, when something like this happened, and you were going to take it seriously. So you took it seriously. You had to find the best people for it. So you have spent some time in Switzerland, am I right?
Yeah.
And what has that been like? What have you learned?
I've learned too much for my little pea-sized brain to hold. But I've had so many people along my path to Switzerland as well that I need to mention and thank. Well, they know who they are. I've just stopped in different spots, and I just think every step kind of led me to there. So I definitely needed all that time off and seeing the people in between. And I've had so many people that have had my back. And eventually I saw a physio who noticed that I had tried riding my bike, and I actually got a neck spasm like instantly after. And that apparently is a sign that, you know, your eyes aren't working properly, aren't firing up properly with your brain and aren't doing their job properly. So she said that, because she works at Red Bull, she's a physio there, and she said that she knows of the concussion center, and she can put me in contact because she really thinks that it's been like three, at the time it had been about 3 months, 3.5, 4 months. She said, if it hasn't got better on its own by now, it's not going to get better on its own type thing. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to try and seek some help. So she actually, pushed me to go there. And I did a couple of days testing, and they brought up the issues. And luckily I wasn't going completely insane, because that's what it feels like when you're not yourself. There were some misfirings in between the eyes and the brain and the balance organ, and they said that they could help me get back to a normal way of life. So obviously when they said that, I was like, I'm all in. Like, just say no more, please.
I'm fully committed to it. Like, that must have felt, did you feel like every day something clicked back into place and you're like, this makes sense to you?
Yeah, it was definitely it was definitely, I was at the point where I was just like, oh my God, it feels so good to have something to look forward to again. Mm. Because obviously my passion is riding my bike, and I always look forward to riding my bike, but I couldn't do that. And to be honest, I wasn't looking forward to riding my bike, because all I could think of is, this just feels like shit. Like every time I go on my bike, it doesn't feel great. So yeah, those feelings were very confusing. So to be somewhere where I knew that I was getting better, and I knew that it was helping, just gave me a lot more motivation. And to feel a bit of spark again inside me was just, you know, something that, I know it's not that long, but in race world, you know, 6 months is huge for us. So yeah, I was very, very happy, but we were constantly on the limit, on the threshold of where my symptoms were. So I was exhausted the whole time. But I mean, Zurich is a very beautiful place, so it was nice to pass out next to the lake there and soak in some rays.
Oh yeah, I saw some of the photos. Absolutely stunning. What a place to recover.
Oh, it was incredible.
Yeah, and heal. Okay, so the last couple of days you have managed to get on your bike just for like a little pootle with friends, right?
Yeah.
And how did that feel? Did it feel less shit?
It did feel a lot less shit. Yes. I was very worried that, because for a long time during that time, I was like, I never want to touch a bike again. There's no point. Like, I feel like, because like, it got so bad. I didn't ever want to live like that. So the feeling that I had was, mm-hmm. I can't live like this. So to go from that and feeling like bikes, like the hatred for them was impossible to contain. I just had so much emotion, to then, you know, yesterday being out pedaling my bike in the sunset and thinking, and just having a smile on my face and getting out to unwind, just felt so surreal to me. And it was something that 5 months ago I never thought I would have been doing, because I was so ready to just, you know, hang the shoes up and be like, this is it, that's my career done now, I'm not touching a bike ever again. So yeah, it was very emotional. I had to give myself a little pat on the back, and it was just, I was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah. You've come a long way.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
What age do female riders tend to sort of retire from this sport?
So I think your average would kind of be like mid-30s, mm. for those that have a good backing behind them, you know, good sponsors and get a good wage. We've actually recently, so someone that I used to compete against with high rivalry was Rachel Atherton. And she's recently given birth, and I think it was last year, and she made a comeback this year. So I wasn't racing, so I got to watch it all. And it was actually incredible. I don't think it's ever been done before. And I'm not sure. I think she must be mid-30s now. So
yeah.
And she's planning on making a comeback. So I have high hopes that, that I still have a long career ahead of me.
Oh, yeah, so she's definitely riffing up the rules. Good for her.
Very inspiring.
But so have you. I want to talk a little bit about what you bring to the sport and what you're, you know, the image that you're in a way trying to change, because it is a male-dominated world. you know, I'm pretty sure a lot of people listening today will not have heard of many people in the sport who are female. Unfortunately, that is still the case. But what I love about you, and I, you know, it's one of the reasons why the Copperfield collaboration works so well, is not shying away from femininity and, you know, being wearing all pink and doing that collaboration with Fox. So that was very pink, and saying you can be girly and you can be gnarly and you can ride a bike. You can be all of these things. You don't have to fit into just one box. Where did that come from?
Growing up with two brothers mainly, yes. Probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think sandwiched between them. No, I don't actually know, because for a long time I remember hating pink, but I think again it must have just been embedded by my brothers, and I got all my older brothers' hand-me-downs clothes wise, so I was a tomboy growing up, and I think it got to the point where I just thought I actually don't really like it. I really like pink, and I don't see it in the sport. And I think it was just at the time as well, I wanted to make a statement. I wanted to wear bright pink clothes, because you just couldn't buy it, because it almost got to a point where it had done like a whole 360 effect, where there were a lot of women getting into the sport, but they didn't want the pink because it was too girly, and it was like, oh, well, we're not trying to be, you know, we're part of the boys, you know, we don't want to be seen as girls trying to ride bikes. We are girls that are riding bikes, and we are gnarly. And I think I got to a point where I'm like, but I am girly, and I do like wearing makeup when I go out, and I do like doing my hair. And there wasn't really a space for that. It never felt like that anyway. When I was growing up, I had to be part of the boys, and, you know, I was one of the boys basically. So I just was hoping that, yeah, if I started to just wear more pink and be more, have, you know, tighter fitting kits and look more feminine, then girls would look at that and be like, well, that looks cool. Like, that looks good. Like, if I can look good riding bikes, then sure, I'll give it a go. Like, and it's been fun. That's the main thing. It has been really, really fun to play with all these pinks and glitters and bring it into my life. You know, merge the two lives has been fun.
I would say a lot of little girls are looking up to you and going, this can be me too. This can be me. I read an article where you quoted a quote. So this is you quoting something else, but I really like that you brought this up. There's a saying, if you're good, you're not pretty. And I hadn't heard this before. If you're good, you're not pretty. And if you're pretty, you're not good.
It's just, it's not that people, you know, they don't say it, but
yeah,
I feel like, you know, for a long time in sport, it was almost like an unwritten rule. It was ridiculous. And, you know, I think, for me, a really good example was a surfer. I think it was Alana Blanchard, but I might be wrong. But she is stunning and a really good surfer, and got so much hate because she did, you know, quite nice photo shoots. She was very feminine. And then all of a sudden, her you know, surf skills would be taken away from her simply because she was a pretty girl. And then, you know, vice versa, they would used to say in our sport only butch ladies or bigger ladies or stronger ladies could possibly be good at our sport. And it just makes no sense to me. It just, I guess they're just the type of barriers that we're trying to pull down, but it's just something in this day and age, to me, is just like, what? Like, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm only doing a tiny part, a minuscule part, but I hope that by doing this minuscule part, it will help in some way.
No, you are making a statement, and I think you really are redefining what all these, you know, sports look like, or should it look like. There should be no stigma. There should be no rules at all attached to them. So let's focus on the glittery parts now to, you know, this whole thing. You've already said that you've learned so much, and you want to shine a light on a few things, right? You want to shine shine a light on concussion and the lesser spoken symptoms, right?
Yeah.
So going forward, what does that look like?
To be honest, it is really hard because, like I say, like a concussion is probably is one of the scariest things for people to have in our sport. So I think that's why it's not spoken about. And people don't want to go onto Instagram and see how someone's had a brain injury plastered all over their feed and when they're about to go and ride. I get that. But at the same time, I think if you don't talk about it, it gets scarier. It gets, you know, you put it to the back of your mind. And I feel like the more I can share my knowledge, what I've learned, the less scary it will be. It'd be like, hey, look, yeah, I have gone through a pretty shitty time, but look how I'm doing now. I'm fine. Like, you know, there have been people that have helped me. There have been people that have listened and have understood. So if, not that there will be, but if ever there is a time or someone you know that goes through that, you can look back and be like, well, actually, I know a person that went through something similar, mm-hmm. and you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
That's all everyone wants is to know that they're going to be okay. So if we can help spread that and, you know, but once I get back to racing, how does that look for me to try and help? At the minute, I'm not actually too sure, honestly, but I will try to keep raising awareness for as long as I can and for as long as people listen to me and follow me. But that's the thing also is, you know, I'm not racing as much and I have lost followers. To me, it doesn't matter, but it does kind of make me a bit sad that, I don't know how to explain it, but it's part of a journey and everyone will go through something at some point in their life that will feel like it shattered them.
Yeah, and the fact that you're sharing that with people, I think is a real gift because, and it will help other people to feel like they can share what they might be, the struggles that they're, you know, facing at the moment when it comes to their, you know, if it's a sporting career or whatever, and to not feel those pressures or to feel stigmatized by whatever impact has happened from a crash or whatever setback they've had. And I think it's already huge. It's already huge what you've already done. So
thank you.
Know that.
It doesn't. Honestly, it doesn't feel like much often, but I do, I try, and then I will get people that, you know, have said that they've felt off or they haven't felt themselves for a couple of years, and looking at my posts have made them realize that they had a crash a couple of years ago and they never got checked out, and all of a sudden they have this huge relief because they think that it's explained, or they're like, actually I'm gonna go and see someone and it is curable. Or people that have suddenly developed depression after a crash a few years ago, and it's not just because you're scared of getting on your bike, you know, it can be a lot deeper than that. And I think helping people realize that and understand that has definitely been a huge win for me, and that has warmed my heart massively, because like I said earlier, it's not something that I would wish upon anyone to feel that way. So if they do feel like there's a way out, then that's amazing.
And I said earlier about how sponsors might be a bit scared to, like, you know, advertise that they're, or you know, see that their riders are taking away some time from the race, and that, you know, whether it's obvious or not, but feeling that pressure to get back on the bike. But you have said, and I love this, is that it's actually an amazing opportunity for them to shine a light on this situation as well. Because, and it's totally right. It absolutely is right. Like, let's not just shine a light on all the shiny bits and the successes and the wins, but like what people actually go through to get on those bikes.
Yeah.
Like, literally every aspect of it should be celebrated and supported.
Absolutely. It's actually last year. So like I said, from my neck was where stemmed the anxiety and stuff.
Yeah.
Because my eyes and brain were already overworking loads. Anyway, I went into my last race of the season, and my clothing sponsor, Fox, they were meant to be doing a documentary on that round and how it was meant to be amazing and I got there and I just was not feeling it. I was so down. I was so exhausted. It was my worst season to date. I didn't understand why, what, when, how. Like, it just, nothing made sense to me. And I was, obviously they captured everything on camera and I kind of forgot about it. And then they showed it to me a month later before it was meant to launch. And I said to them, I was like, oh my God, I'm not sure you can put this out. It's so, I've got no, there's no spark, there's no nothing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Yeah, they reassured me that that was what people wanted to see. They want to see that we're not robots. In the end, it was really well received. And like now that you've mentioned that as well, it was actually really nice that the sponsors as well accepted that side of me and welcomed that side of me and wanted to share that side as well. Cause,
good. They should.
Yeah, like I say, we didn't win. But
yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm so glad they convinced you of that. And you're making a little film about the last few months as well, aren't you?
Yeah. So we've, I'm actually, this is another one I'm quite worried about because we have been so vulnerable on camera. We've had people follow us all year. And obviously, as you can tell, this year hasn't been, this been my worst yet. So for a big film company to come in, well, they're not a film, they are a film company, but we've all worked together. But, you know, our sponsors have invested a lot of money into this series. And to know that their main rider has dropped out after one race because of a brain injury is not something that you'd expect after investing a lot of money. And I was, you know, at my fittest, my strongest going into this year. So we were set to have a really, really good year. But I think looking back, I think it's going to be really interesting. I think, like you say, it's not something that people see all the time. And it's something people are worried about and scared of. So hopefully seeing, you know, a pro rider who has won World Cups and is hopefully going to come back and win more, has gone through this and has showed the story. And, you know, there's my brother as well. He struggles. He didn't qualify at all this season. He's finally put an end to his World Cup career. So, you know, and he's gonna try and do some free riding because that's what he's absolutely born to do, his tricks. And but yeah, that hasn't been the easiest decision for him. So there's just all lots of things that, you know, people that come and watch the races or follow the race, and they just don't see because, well, we don't share it because we think it's just life.
I mean, personally, I love all that behind the scenes. Like life stories. Oh, you know, I want to see when a human is being a human, not when they're on the stage.
Yeah.
So I think lots of people will.
Lots of tears.
Yeah, I would expect there to be.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Cool. Well, is there anything else that you wanted to mention on the glittery side that we haven't already talked about?
I mean, other than the facts that I feel like I've been reborn. And
well, okay, this is huge. It's a massive statement, honey. Thank you.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Like I said before, we were just in such a comfortable bubble. Nothing was ever really. Yeah, we're so lucky and so privileged, and it's just, you know, there wasn't much hardship other than racing, it's just something that I've always known. And I think having this happen to me put me in the most uncomfortable setting that I could ever imagine. I couldn't even go outside at one point without crying or without feeling insanely overwhelmed and anxious. I had to have cuddles from my mum every single day. And I don't know, just the slow life, to relearn the slow life, the small things, the things that genuinely matter. They're things that I never really had time to appreciate or to enjoy because I was too busy searching for the next, how I was going to be faster, how I was going to be better, how I was going to be the best. It's just, it's draining. And like, gold medals look amazing on the wall, but apart from that, our journey was the whole reason why we started this. And we've always said that. We've always said it's about the process. We've always said we learn more from losing, but it's because we enjoy our process so much. We gain memories. We travel the world together. We meet new people, new friends. And I think I just lost track of all of that. I did become a sort of machine and a billboard, and I just completely lost touch with who I was and why I did it.
Wow. It must be quite reassuring that you didn't get to the end of your career and to not have had that realization all the way along. And I mean, I often say this with cancer, like, I don't recommend cancer. Like, it's not something I think everyone should go out and get. But had I not had it, or, you know, if I wasn't still living with it, I'm not sure that I would tune into certain aspects of life the way I do. And then what if I get to the end of my life and wish I'd done this, or if I'd, you know, I was look back at my attitude and went, I'd really regretted stuff, then that would be such a crying shame. It's just terrifying and sometimes frustrating to know that it takes something as awful as crashing and getting concussion and going almost, you know, losing yourself in that, or cancer, for us to realize that. But it shouldn't take those things, right? Okay, I want to move on to a lesson, a thing, you know, or a piece of advice, something that you've learned from glittering your turd.
Advice, for sure, it's simple, but slow down. I think just learn to enjoy the slow life. But it's so relative to me because we've always been in the fast life. It's all it's ever been about. I think you have to learn your own way, don't you? But if someone had just said to me, chill out, it would have been very beneficial for someone like me who has an overactive brain, to say the least. So,
great advice. Really good advice. And then an item, it could be something physical or imagined. In the past, people have said cups of tea or cake or their mums. That has helped you to glitter your turd.
Well, I was thinking about this, and there has not been any items at all. I felt very detached from everything. But yeah, the one thing, my mum was a huge anchor for me in the beginning when I was not okay. Whenever I look back at where I was then, she was just there. And, you know, so was my dad and my boyfriend and brother, but they were away racing and mum was here, and she just, it was like I was a baby again. I needed her so much, and she was able to be there, and she gave her all for me. So, and, you know, she didn't understand, but she couldn't have possibly understood what was going through my head, but she still just chose to be there for me, which I'll forever be thankful for.
I do think there's a sort of sense in mums that makes them feel like it's non-negotiable, and they do get it in some way. They have this sixth sense. Great.
No, they're just superhumans, say the least.
Yeah. Now we're going to listen to Amanda tell us about how they glittered their turd.
My glittering a turd is I discovered that my father had lung cancer as I was returning from a year being away, travelling the world. And during that stress, I went on to develop ulcerative colitis. So I have spent many years going through a lot of intensive, deep interpersonal work on myself, I now share all of that knowledge that I have gained in that journey and getting to the place where I am today, where I have a lovely business where I do complementary therapies called The Art of Healing. And I've always firmly believed, and I've been very fortunate to believe, that you always have the option to see things from a positive perspective. And that's what kept me going, is the knowledge and strength that there will be a brighter day ahead. One day it won't be so painful, and that helps me to move forward.
Wow.
Yeah, a really brilliant story. Do you know what I really like what she said is that we have an option to look at the positives of a situation. There's like this, you don't have to be forced to, like no one's making you look at them, but then we have that option. And if we take it, it might be a really good thing. Like, I really love that.
I needed that actually. That was very powerful.
Yeah, thank you, Amanda. Finally, if you have a drink nearby, otherwise it can be imaginary, we're just going to cheers.
Wait, I have my cup of herbal tea.
Okay, so let's cheers to your turd, my turd, everybody's turd. Cheers.
Cheers to the turds.
Well, I can't help but think that Tani's turd arrived at such a crucial point in her career when she can still use it to her advantage. I'm really looking forward to watching Tani get back on the bike with this brand new fresh attitude to life and living. The documentary that we mentioned is called How We Roll, and it's out this month. Please go follow Tani on Instagram so you don't miss it. I'm really looking forward to watching that too. Thank you so much, Tani, for speaking to me. I know that would have sucked a lot of energy out of you, so I appreciate you and your time. Thanks also to Amanda for this week's turd story, and of course a well-deserved pat on the back. And thank you to you for listening. Love, glitter, and all things good to you, and hopefully see you next time.